Going back to 1963, that particular engine was sitting in a paddock somewhere between a little township called Rangawahia and Mangaweka. And six guys, sounds a bit like the six companies that built the Hoover Dam in America, but six guys had the inspiration to follow the engine up, purchase the engine, and carry out a fair bit of repair work and bits and pieces on it over a period of a few months to get the engine back into steam again and working, and then drove the engine over a period of a few days from where it sat back to the area around Martin Fielding, where they duly formed the Steam Traction Society. Okay, so this is the inspiration of six guys. The names probably don't mean a lot to you, but Mike Barnes, Mike Coglin, Ian Chamberlain, John Pudsey, Ron Boyce and Ron Alexander were the six guys that carried this out. As time's gone on, of course, the Steam Traction Society has grown from six guys and one engine to 40 guys and about, what we have there, about 15 engines, and probably as many again in states of disrepair or repair, whichever way you want to look at it. What you've got to also consider, 50 years ago, the engine was only 50 years old. A lot of engines were suffering the fate of being scrapped. They've come to the end of their working life and suffered the fate of the scrap man. And that's reflected by the fact that in the time when you could buy a brand new traction engine, if that's what you wanted to do or you're in a position to do so, around about 2,500 engines were sold into New Zealand. Of that number, around about 190 to 200 remain throughout the country. And it would also be fair to say that probably around about half that number are actually running. The rest of them are all in various states of disrepair. So in comparison, in England, today there's about 3,500 engines restored and running in England. So movement over there is very popular. So what we decided to do, a few of us started talking a couple of years ago, and we thought that the Steam Traction Society was approaching its 50-year milestone. Subsequently, that would tell us, if you did the maths, that the engine was approaching becoming a centenarian. And we thought, what should we do to the market's occasion? So anyway, that got bandied around a bit as it does, and it was decided that why don't we, a whole group of us, why don't we get on the engines, drive the engines back to the same spot where the old Ransoms were sitting, and park it up there, take some photos of it, have a bit of a reminisce, and then recreate that journey back to Fielding that happened 50 years ago. Ironically, the six guys were all still alive. They were only young fellas like me back then, or even younger, but they're all still alive, so they all took part in this run as well, not on the engine, but they came up in cars and followed us through and took lots of photos and reminisced, and well, they had a great time, as did we. But anyway, what we have got up here is a bit of a presentation there, which we'll work our way through it and tell you a bit of what happened on the run. Alan and Andrew might want to pitch in and tell a few stories or whatever. So we'll work through that. This particular photo here, obviously, they're titled up the 50th anniversary. Ransom Sims and Jeffries number 24090, which is that engine out there. And yeah, the epic journey. There's a great raft of engines there. There, just parked amongst here, you can obviously recognise Alan and myself. And we got every engine that we could together and took a photo outside the clubs before we started our journey. The other thing too, with undertaking a journey like this, there was a hell of a lot of preparation. It's not just a matter of chucking a fire and engine or we'll drive up the ring of walking and back. There's a great raft of logistics to sort out. You've got to find water. Water's a very important part of it, obviously. You've got to, you know, find out where your water stops are. Some guys carry tankers, tow tankers behind the engines just to help them along a wee bit. The old story was, when we did the recce originally, there was heaps of water, and when we went on the run, there wasn't so much. It was a different time of the year. Fuel stops, I mean, they burn a lot of coal, wood, whatever. We burned coal most of the time on that journey because you can get so much more efficiency or distance out of coal. So anyway, we departed the Steam Traction Society there, and with an old wooden worry that Joe and I got at home there, which actually isn't that old. It's about 3 years old now, I suppose. That's been a joint venture between my father, Kevin, Joanne's father, Peter, they're the carpenters really, and a bit of my input, a bit of Joanne's input, just where it all worked. I'll lay fame to building the chassis and go underneath it. Yeah, that's the engineering side of it, that was me. So anyway, we've headed out of Fielding, we've come up Marquino Road, looking for water. And the next photo will show just that. We come up quite a steep hill, and there's there's Andrew or myself down there, a little bit of water in there that with the pipe from the engine lifting a bit of water up to fill the tender again so we can continue on our way. And then moving on from there, that was our first night's stop. We'd been on the road for about 3 or 4 hours and we came to a little place called Cheltenham. And we stopped at the pub there. At this stage there was only two of us. Young John Munro and Richard Adams, they decided to come with us, and we decided we'd go one day earlier and just get a little bit ahead just to make it a little bit easier, so it took a little bit of stress off the run. 18 kilometres doesn't sound like a lot, but already there'd been a bit of work to get up there as they're looking for water and what have you. So we stopped there the night, and the people in the pub there were very hospitable. They were just wrecked. It was marvellous that we'd done that. And then the next day we got steam up again and we moved on, and we came into Kimbolton, and that's parked up on the main street of Kimbolton. So I didn't write the mileage down on that, but that would have been probably another 14 or 15 k from Cheltenham into Kimbolton. I don't have a photo of it, but basically opposite where we are is the old Kimbolton garage there. And I'll tell you what, it's a museum in its own right. Yeah, it's a real traditional old garage there, but I mean from the front it just looks like an old service station, but man, they quite had some stuff in there. It was quite amazing. And there you go, that was some of the coal we were burning. Coal that needs no shovel. I mean, a lot of coal, you get a small, so you've got to shovel it, but I suppose deep down inside, I cheated a wee bit there. We had a great pile of coal at the fielding there that we'd been donated. That's good coal from the west coast. Got a real high calorific value. That burns intensely hot. It's good stuff. It's like rocket fuel, really. So, I must admit, yeah, when we sort of got some coal supplies sorted out, I went through the pile and I got some big lumps like this, because they are awesome. I mean, that lump of coal like that, you might as well say, is the equivalent to about a massive heaped wheelbarrow load of wood. That's the energy equivalent of something like that. You were sort of on the road there. That's typical of the roads that we started to travel on. A fair bit of smoke going on there too. Obviously, I've got my head down and bum up there getting a bit more coal into the engine or doing whatever, and Alan's faithfully steering the engine. Well, generally you run, it's easy to run with two people. You have the engine driver and your steersman. Ironically, I don't know whether it's real true or not, but there is a bit of folklore from the old engine driver's code that if Alan crashes into something, because at that point I'm driving the engine, I'm the engine driver, Alan's steering for me. If we crash into something, it's actually my fault. Not Alan's fault, it's my fault. I'm the engine driver. Somehow I think, you know, there'd be blame on both parties, but yeah, that's the way it is. Just beautiful countryside, eh? Just with the engine, the galley, and really not a care in the world. If everything's going alright, that's cool. I've stood up there, I'm looking at something there, either looking to see if the coppers are behind me, or sometimes if you stand up you can get a better shot of something. Anyway, we had actually run out of coal. And at this stage we were about 2 kilometres, I suppose. 2 or 3 k's in a straight line from Apatee, you see. And we actually ran out of wood. We've got plenty of water, so there you go. This is the sort of thing that happens. We knew we had stacks of coal at Apatee, but we still had about 2 or 3 k's to go. In desperation, we had a bit of a recce around some paddocks, and we found some old rotten posts and general bits and pieces, and actually got more than what we thought. So fortunately, yeah, I detailed Alan and Andrew to climb the fence, and I just stacked the wood in the thing, you see. So if someone got a shotgun out, well, I could have just started at 5 kilometres an hour. So yeah, those are the sort of issues that you have, and yeah. So anyway, and there's the sign, Apatee. They grow like spuds in Apatee, don't they? Yeah. We didn't see any spuds growing, but anyway, obviously we're fairly close to Apatee. There's no smoke coming out of the engine, the dirty coal's gone, and we're burning all that nice rotten timber, which wasn't so smoky. And when we got to Apatee, some of the other guys caught up with us. That's young Johnny McLean with his little Fowler engine. You can see the trailer he's towing, there's a great stack of coal on there. So they weren't going to run out of coal, they were probably more likely to run out of water. Yeah, so they carried a lot of coal, and they'd sort of all caught up with us at that stage. And there's the galley and the engine park outside the Apatee pub. They also put on a real good meal for us that night. Well, at that stage we covered, just on the back thing, we're 9 kilometres from Cheltenham, you see, so sort of up around 40, getting close to 50 k's. Yeah, so even though guys can be a bit dirty at times, and this is nice to have a bit of a clean up, they had no real facilities to have a wash here, so we steamed up an old big pot with some steam, warmed up some water there, and we had a wash in that. So that's what's going on there. At least you can make yourself relatively clean. So we had a bath before tea, you see, you don't get yourself clean up your act, you're not allowed to have tea. We're back on the road again the following day. Now, actually, when we get to the end of the the still photos, we've got a couple of videos of the hills that we travelled. There was two gorges between when we left Apiti and before we got to Rangawahia. There was a couple of really steep gorges there. They made for real challenging work on the engine. We worked the engines hard. As we come up out of the gorge, you can actually see the bridge way down the valley down here. As we've come up there, the safeties have started howling off. By the time we got to there, that engine had a hammering from hell, I suppose you could say, just about. Worked very, very hard, and hopefully we'll be able to get a bit of live footage on what it actually looked like. That's quite a good shot of John and Richard on an old Marshall engine coming up behind and following us along. Then, this is where it all happens again, you see, like, the water supplies. Now, when we did the rec yard, I said, oh yeah, we'll be able to suck water out of that creek, because when we leave this spot where the engine's parked, that's the steepest hill of the lot. We've got a real hard pull ahead of us there. So what do? We lift the water up. We need desperately need water. There's no way we're going to get up that hill without running out of water. So anyway, we cut some notches in the bank, and we went down, and we had to carry that big bucket of water up that hill. And of course, we only took a half a pail each time, because it's, you can see it's a big pail, so, or a big pot. So by the time we did several journeys down the bank and up there, yeah, we were getting pretty knackered actually. But anyway, but I didn't have any migraines on that trip either, but maybe I was thinking of what Dad was saying and being prepared. But yeah, that was just the sort of thing you have to do. Then we got up to the top and we found some troughs, and the locals were more than happy to let us go in there and flog some water out of their troughs. The kids came out, so we gave some kids a bit of a ride around, and they all had a look at the engine. Just something that they've never ever seen. Like, it was, you know, you just don't see that sort of thing on the road anymore. And I think, you know, the locals and the kids alike were really blown away by the sudden influx of a group of guys doing something like this. Anyway, we top on some water and we scarped from there. And there it is. This is sort of starting to get a little historical now, because Rangawahia was really the destination. That would be the nearest bit of civilization, I suppose, to where the engine was actually found. And I quite like that photo, because there's Rangawahia. There's the, you can see the flywheel of the engine, the gear train. And I mean, these are just little photos that make it really quite good. The Barnes family, they turned up with their little Garrett engine, and so there again, they've got some water on board, but no fuel. So we were sharing all the stuff amongst ourselves. Once we all got together and grouped, we were fine. It worked out really well. It was just that, as I say, we left the day earlier. What we should have probably done is thrown half a dozen or 10 sacks of coal in the galley, and it would have been fine. The Rangawahia garage, we stopped there for a couple of nights. One night. Yeah, the garage is basically derelict, and that's what it is. Dave Larson and family, they bought their McLaren engine up, and that's their little commode behind it there. Now, this is where it gets really historic. Here we go, 50 years on, and Alan and I came down the hill, the area where the pump shed was, where the engine was found 50 years ago. It was quite appropriate to put a Mokopuna mover up there, because you can tell that it was actually a recent photo, because, you know, there it is. I mean, that car's not 50 years old. As poised as it is, we'll chuck a photo of a Mokopuna mover in there and do it in black and white. So anyway, we came down there and we positioned the engine. Yeah, oh, this is starting to get quite emotional by this stage, because, you know, it had been 50 years. The engine was actually back in its original spot where it was found by these six guys. So we were starting to think, wow, we've actually done it. We've got here, and we still have the journey ahead of us to go home. And we're having a bit of a muck around there, positioning ourselves by the pump shed. There's myself, the guy next to the large wheel on the left-hand side, Mike Barnes. His family got another two or three engines now, so they're still very heavily involved in the engine movement. And John Pudsey, the guy with the black shirt on, he, at the time, 50 years ago, he was the only person of the six members that actually had an engine driver's ticket. Even though Mike Barnes worked for the railways, even so, he was a fitter. He didn't at that stage actually carry an engine driver's ticket. But John Pudsey was, of the six guys, he was at that stage the sole engine driver. Now, we put that photo in there. That engine, believe it or not, there's the pump shed. It's probably not exactly the right angle, but that's what the engine looked like when they found it. That's the same engine. As you can see, there's, you know, there's been a bit of repair work there and around the smoke box there. But yeah, I mean, at that stage, no rubber tyres on it, obviously. Yeah, that was basically what it looked like. At that stage, it had a 50-year working life. Yeah, there it says, Ransom Sims and Jeffrey, 6 nominal horsepower, traction engine 24090, 1912 at Rangawahia in 1963. As found by the group of six enthusiasts who took part in its epic journey, steaming 8 days from Rangawahia to Martin and into preservation and beyond. So yeah, that was awesome. So anyway, we moved on from there, we took a few more photos. Now, the pump shed. We had to put this photo in there because the pump shed has assumedly been there for 50 years. And I guess it's a little bit like Grandpa's axe, where it's been repaired a few times and looks like it's had a new power pole put in at some stage in its life. We're not too sure about the door on the pump shed. We're not quite sure that was there 50 years ago. We sort of come to the conclusion that if you jump up in there or head into the atmosphere, you'll get to Woodville, and if you bury yourself, you'll end up heading towards Levin and Shannon. Anyway, we thought that was quite amusing, really. Yeah, it speaks for itself, really. I'm quite proud, really, of that effort to have the engine there after, at this stage, owning the engine for around about 20 years and to have actually gone and done something like that with the help of Alan and Andrew here and everybody else that sort of took part of it. So after we all sort of sat around and reminisced a bit and joked and laughed and poked the borax at each other, we got back on the engine again and headed back out of the spot where it was. We headed around. In 1963, they never came out through the river and up and across to where the two guys are coming out of the paddock now. That's the same spot they came out, but they'd actually come out across the river. But of course, getting across the river now, there's all fences and all that sort of stuff. So what we did is we came back around the road, and then I got off the engine. I got these two guys, John Pudsey and Mike Barnes, to drive the engine out of the paddock. So there they are there, 50 years on. They've got rubber tyres on now and an engine that's probably in a lot better condition than what it was when they first pulled it out of there. And the road going up the hill there, and I think the next photo is there again, an original photo. That shed in the background is not there, but the angle of the hill is exactly the same. The rugged back country foothills of the Ruahini Ranges where the Ransoms was found is visible in this picture, which was taken shortly after starting the journey in the morning on the narrow winding Kariwa Road before reaching Rangawahia. This particular point is roughly between Rangawahia and Mangaweka itself. There they are there. Same guys having a moment of glory on the old engine. Then Joanne and young Nathaniel, they joined the fiasco. They come along and they spent some time, well, the last two or three days actually of the run, they came with us, and that was really their introduction. It's a very different thing to be driving an engine on the road, on hill work and things like that, as opposed to just driving around town like we are now or on an Art Deco weekend. It's a very different sort of thing to do. Another shot of the Mangaweka Road there, making lots of smoke. And now that engine belongs to Steve McLoone and his family. Now that engine is actually very historic to this area as well, because it was owned by Robert Holt and Sons a number of years ago, and it spent a lot of time running between Pukatitri and Napier. And as legend has it, that engine, because of the nature of the roads and the terrain and stuff like that way back then, in its period of working life, it actually spent a lot of time, each time it came back from Pukatitri, like a lot of engines that were used in the country, the blacksmith or the machine shop having repairs before it went back on its next journey to Pukatitri. So yeah, that's a bit historic to Hawke's Bay, that engine. There's another photo there of somewhere between Rangawahia, and we were heading back to Kimbolton at that stage. So that's the sort of road that we were on. Now, Glenmore Station. That was one of the places they stopped on the way home from Rangawahia. And the next photo is of the old woolshed that they actually stopped, and on the way they stayed there, or might have been two or three days before they had another go at continuing on. There's the engine and the same shed 50 years ago. So yeah, there it is, Glenmore Station 50 years ago, and we were there last year just doing that recreation. It was marvellous. We had a great time. And then, of course, some of the things we have to put up with, that's the sort of thing we have to put up with, the view. Here, looking over towards the mountain group there in the central plateau. Now, I can't really blame anybody for this as much as I tried. When we stopped for a cup of tea there, the safety chain that you can see hanging there got caught up. There was like a big pile of stuff on the side of the road there, the rotten thing. And when I went to go back so we could sort of swing and head to continue on, the safety chain caught the back of the engine there and bent all the drawbar. Yeah, it was quite frustrating actually, and I'm generally a non-swearing sort of person, but once we got going and the engine, no one could hear me, there was a bit of bad language really, just I was quite annoyed about it actually, but yeah, I guess that's the way it goes sometimes. But at that stage we were back at Cheltenham. By this time we'd been on the road for, what was it, 4 or 5 days. the fifth day, and we were heading back to Fielding. We stopped there and had lunch, and then we continued on our way back to Fielding to the Steam Traction Society. Here we are back at the Steam Traction Society. So it's Alan and myself, and yeah, the end of the epic journey. We actually covered around about 156 kilometres. It was amazing, bearing in mind that 156 kilometres was done at around about 4 to 5 kilometres an hour, sometimes even less than that. So that was our trip over, really. That's taken in 1912, when the engine was new at Eagleton's. They were the first people to own the engine in New Zealand when it was new. And the next photo gives you an idea of how many engines there are in the Steam Tracking Society of Fielding. So it's gone from, you know, that one engine of ours to what you see there. And I mean, it doesn't matter what sort of club you're into, they'll start, take somebody to get together, make it work, and then you see, you hear the engine really working now. You sort of hear it starting to really slow down. And the engine's got a full set of steam. If you lose the pressure, you're in a bit of trouble. You've got to be onto it. This is what happens when the hills are too steep. There was a piece on this hill that sort of went up and then it became quite steep. The engine's still in top gear. It only has two speeds, 1.5 and 3 miles per hour, but we were actually still in top gear at this stage. So we've got a full head of steam there, so as high as we can go as far as pressure is concerned. The safeties are lifting. And you don't have to thrash the engine, you don't have to speed it up, because an engine develops its full power at zero revs. So you don't have to speed the thing up or anything like that, you just got to stay at that speed and keep it going. And I wasn't the only one that stalled on that hill. So I stalled the regulator wide open, the engine stalled. So what we're going to do now is block the engine so it doesn't roll back. We're going to change it into low gear and then let the steam out of the engine so we can move the crankshaft and get it into gear. Change into low gear, put the crankshaft in a good position, and then get ourselves going again. And we're sort of going half the speed now. Then my hat fell off and I ran it over. Every day was a bit of adventure. It was great.
Do you have to stop to change gears?
Yeah, you do, because what happens is, like, especially when you stall, your regulator is still wide open, so you've still got your full head of steam that is in the actual engine itself, and so you've got to lock the engine and you've got to take it out of gear, slide it into the lower gear, and then start off from there. You can change gear if you're going along, if you took off slow down on a straight bit of road and for whatever reason you want to change into a higher gear, you can actually change, but on a hill after a stall, yeah, you've got to depressurize the cylinder and put it to the next lower gear.
Did you have to get permission off the police or traffic?
No, not really, but what we did do is we did let the land transport side of it, we did let them know that we were doing it, out of courtesy. If we were doing it on a main road somewhere, on a state highway or something like that, yes, you'd have to also let them know. We also had people following in cars with a sign to let people know that this was going on ahead on the road.
Did you cars amongst traffic?
No, not where we went, because that particular run was way out in the country. So we passed a few milk tankers and things like that, and then the odd person, the people living out there. But no, it was really good. We didn't really have much hassle with any traffic at all.
So Wayne, I can see you don't get a ticket for speeding, but do you get one for going too slow?
Yeah, well, I guess on a motorway or something like that, or on a state highway, you might well get a reprimand. The funny thing is, at certain times of the day, the traffic would actually hold me up on the Harbour Bridge or in Queen Street in Auckland or something like that.
Which is the most difficult, going up or going down?
Actually, to be perfectly honest with you, going downhill is the worst of the lot. Going uphill, no problem. Just keep your steam up to full pressure and make sure that you've got a good set of chocks to stop the engine if you have to go into lower gear. But going downhill, you're more likely to get into trouble going downhill. That is definitely the case there.
About tickets, you made the point before that the bloke doing the firing was actually in charge of tracking the engine rather than the chap doing the steering.
As long as you've got one person on the engine, either the guy steering the engine or the person being the actual driver, as long as one of you is a qualified engine driver, that's all you need.
What sort of test did they put you through?
Well, when I did mine, I had to do mine under the old Marine Department regime, because I did mine nearly 20 years ago. But that's all gone now. It's all done by the New Zealand Qualification Authority. It's all done under that now. And when I did it, you had to prove that you'd actually spent, believe it or not, 1,040 hours. 1,000 hours, which actually is the equivalent of 6 months working, which is, you know, impossible when you've got something like that. I mean, it's, when I did mine, I guess, to be perfectly honest with you, I had spent 3 years with the engine, drove without having a ticket. I actually had a lot of support from other people that were involved with the Steam Tracking Society, but I actually made a self-declaration of 600 hours, and I had to get that signed by somebody, like a justice of the peace. In fact, I got the guy from the VTNZ to do it, and they were more than happy. The Marine Department said, we're going to give you your ticket anyway, because you know what you're doing, and you'll just get it sorted out.
So you physically
hit a test? I did, yeah, I had to sit down and spend a couple of hours. Yeah, I was quite involved actually. They've made it a little bit easier now.
The manufacturer would be producing 10 of those a week. Manufacturing, building...
engines.
Yeah, if you had 24,090, which is your number.
Oh yeah, but it wasn't only just engines, there was portable engines, the threshing mill and all that sort of stuff as well with the engine numbers, yeah.
What about tyres? Because how common were they on traction engines?
Well, tyres were non-existent. We put rubber on those tyres that are on my engine out there. That one's going to come off a motor scraper, like a Euclid or whatever people used to call them. And we've just cut the sidewalls off and end up with the actual tread and put them onto the actual wheels. For two reasons. One, it does make it a little bit nicer to ride on because there's no springs on it. You can ride the steel aluminum wheels on the road. Plus, it does actually look after the road a bit better.
A warrant of fitness, Blaine. Explain about a warrant.
Traction engines don't have a warrant of fitness as such. They do have to carry a registration. The registration, $19 a year, which is quite good. But they have to carry a current certificate, which is done by the Marine Department. One thing offsets another. There's no warrant of fitness. The registration costs virtually nothing, $19 a year. But each year for the annual survey, you might as well say it's about $400. We'd have the Marine Department come and check that out.
Were traction engines ever
oil fired? Not as a rule. The odd engines were converted to run on oil. None of them came out as an oil fired unit. Locomotives were oil fired. It was a lot easier. You take a big KA locomotive, they would burn 5 to 6, 7, 8 tons of coal every 200 kilometres or whatever. It was a lot of work for a fireman to feed a big locomotive that size. And the oil fire made it a whole lot easier for them. But you've got to be very careful, like a smaller boiler like that, if you need to convert or try to run oil in that. You can't have the flame or the oil impinging against the side of the firebox. It generates too much heat and can cause a lot of problems. Yeah. There are some photos on here. I mean, if you want to have a look in due course, a couple of years ago when the engine was actually in its centennial year, we put the engine and a couple of old trucks that were also their centennial year outside the house here. Because of the nature of the engine, it's been in a few calendars. There's a 2011 calendar that was done for the Waipawa 150th celebration. They put a really nice photo of the engine in there. 2008, we actually went on a run up to Pukatitri on the engine. I regret to say that we never made it on the engine because the engine had a big breakdown on the way up there. But anyway, that was after they got quite a good photo of the engine on Apley Road.
You've taken it down the South Island as well.
I have had it down. In 2005, I took it to three events down in South Island. One to Edendale, then to Gore. You've got to say it right, because you've got to roll that R. And then to a week-long rally at Kirwee, which is just out of Christchurch. That was well worth the effort.
Did you drive the whole way?
No, we had it transported down to Gore. So, yeah, that's really probably pretty much what we've got to say about what we've done. But James Bauman here has got a 10-minute CD of the Tokomaru Steam Engine Museum, which would be worth having a quick look if you're interested. Cool. Is there any more questions that you'd like to ask?
Have you still got that truck?
No, I haven't got the old Thornycroft truck now. Sometimes you've got to be sensible and sort of scale down on your collection of weird bits. Yeah. You look at an engine like that, realistically, even though Joe and I own it, at the end of the day, we're just custodians of stuff like that. I mean, well, really, we're just responsible to keep things like that going for future generations.
What's its next engagement?
The engine, well, I'll be honest with you, this is going to be the last run for the engine for a little while, perhaps. Well, if all goes well, I would like to have it going again by the end of the year, ready for Art Deco weekend, but in 20 years, it has had a lot of use. And the engine is actually due for some repairs. oil wise, it needs some new stage tubes and bits and pieces in it, and a few other bits and pieces, and that all costs money, you know. I'll be honest with you, I could probably end up spending, you know, $10,000 on the engine in the next 12 months if I have to, but hopefully I won't have to. But yeah, now we've done this run to fielding, and it's nice to be able to bring it up today and do this. Yeah, I do need to pull the engine off the road and look at some heavy repair work on it. We'll see really how that goes and work from there.
How much problem is it getting tradesmen to work on those?
Oh. Actually, I'll be honest with you, it's easier now. It's almost easier now to get work done. If you've got some tricky machine work or whatever, it seems to almost be easier nowadays. Like if I've got to do some welding repairs, there's a little bit of wastage in certain areas. I can do it myself, but I'm not allowed because I'm not a certified welder to do work on pressure vessels, but there's enough people in the industry now that specialise in doing work on pressure vessels, and they've got the right tickets and the right gear, and it's just as easy to get them to do it, get it prepared. Everything you do on the boiler side of it has got to have a procedure, or it's got to be done properly, so that the Marine Department, or SGS as they call themselves now, they've got to have all the right procedure. And fair enough, because there's a tremendous amount of energy stored up in the engine if something goes wrong.
What sort of pressure do your releasing valves?
The safety valves are set at 150 pounds per square inch, which is high enough. By crikey, if it ruptures or something goes wrong. Over the years, I've had a few things do that, like an inspection door. We've blown the odd gasket on an inspection door. Alan and I were driving back from Chris Pass one day on one of Chris's engine, which is the same size as that engine out there. And in the smoke box, I froze a big inspection door, and I said to Chris, oh, you know, you tighten that up. Yeah, I've checked it, I've done it. Because when you put a new gasket or a new bit of Sealex in there, you've got to tighten it up as the pressure comes up. And I said, I better have a look. And he got a bit huffy because he felt, oh, you don't trust me, you see. So anyway, I walked right over. Alan and I hopped on the engine, and we headed out of the winery down to Mahu Road, headed for home. And just coming around the roundabout by John Bates, wheel alignment there, and at that precise moment the safety started to lift, so it was up a full head of steam, and it blew the gasket in the front of the smoke box big time, and well, you wouldn't believe it. And I sort of pulled over to the side of the road. You couldn't even see the engine for steam, and there was steam pouring out the funnel, there was steam pouring out the firebox. Alan leaps off and starts firing a bit of dirt up on there to put the fire out, and I think I said that at the time, well, I wouldn't worry about it. The fire would have been well blown out by now, and all we did was just turn the feed pump on and sort of stood back. I was quite wet and half broiled as a result, because most people going past know who I am, guys in the industry, and they were laughing and waving out and carrying on. And as I turned around, and sort of like 5 minutes went by, and I saw Pass coming out of his driveway with a tractor in it. So yeah, some of the things I think you look back on, you have to have a good laugh about it, really. It was very little said. It was a very silent trip back to the winery, actually. So I went home, and a couple of days later, we went back and put a new gasket in it, and this time there was nothing said as we went through the raising of the pressure and brought it up to pressure, and subsequently continued on our way. So, yeah. I hope it's been alright. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. I'm starting to feel a little bit better now.
Well, Wayne, we want to thank you very much for...
Oh, that's alright, James.
As a steam enthusiast myself, I could just listen to this forever. When are you doing the next one?
I could travel on all day. I'll be looking so forward to coming and doing this, actually. Every now and then I'd go up to Corunga, but one year we went up there, there's a friend of mine from Wellington, actually, we were going up to Corunga. At that time of the year, we were almost at a fire ban, and it's really risking, you know, pushing your luck driving the engine, especially up something like that with lots of trees and dry grass. Sure enough, I looked behind, there was a couple of hot spots on the ground. I said to Pagey, I said, get off and put those fires out. And I kept slowly sort of ticking up the road. Here's Pagey running up behind the engine, he was stamping on bits of hot stuff on the road, and yeah, we managed to get away, because I'm also in the brigade in Havelock, which I've been in the fire brigade here in Havelock for nearly 30 years now. I was joined as a young fella, and I would never have lived a damn man if I had to call the brigade out and put a fire out from the engine.
Well, thanks very much. Give you a nice round of applause.
Just sort of going back, you know, with Alan and Andrew and Jolene here, we had a great time on that trip, and I think it'll be something that we won't forget for a long time. In fact, it'd be nice to go away and do a run like that again at some stage.
What
about
the braking system? It's harder coming down.
This is where, when you saw the bent drawbar, you might have seen a braking cylinder without the lever on, and some of those other photos showed it. But it is a serious issue, actually. The engine doesn't have any brakes. Even go home from here, we're downhill, and it's something you'll be watching all the time. To use the engine itself, just pull the reversing lever back or use the steam to hold the engine back. But if something breaks on the engine, it can be a serious issue. And over the years, engines were lost. There's no doubt about it. A lot of engines were lost through that very reason. I wouldn't have done that run over the Tauranga Wahia if I didn't have some form of braking on the engine or braking outside the engine. The galley that we've got has, well, I've fixed up all the brakes on that, and even though it's a manual brake, it's a hydraulic brake and it works quite well. It may not have held the engine back entirely, but when we were going down some of those long hills on those gorges before we then climbed the hills, every downhill run was done in low gear and we went really, really slow, and we used the brake on the trailer and we just kept on. So if something had broken or something had gone wrong, we would have had a better chance of stopping the engine. You've just got to be watching what's going on. And yeah,
sounds a bit nerve-wracking.
Yeah, no, I'm going to put you off.